This is the fourth Teacher Toolbox episode. Now, I hear from listeners all the time that they like the actionable tips and suggestions for activities that they can use right away with their students, like tomorrow or even next week. That usually means that they are effective and beneficial, yes, but also somewhat minimal prep. So that's what I bring you in these Teacher Toolbox episodes. I have another four activities to share with you, so let's jump in. Are you a language teacher looking for some reassurance that what you're doing in the classroom is on the right track? Or maybe you're looking for some ways to teach even more effectively? If you're one or the other or somewhere in between, you've landed in the right place. This is the World Language Classroom Podcast with your host, me, Joshua Cabral. You're about to get tips, tools, and resources so that your students continue to rise in proficiency and communicate with confidence. Let's jump in. Vamos, allons-y! Hello, my friends. Bonjour, mes amis. Hola, mis amigos. Welcome to the World Language Classroom Podcast. I am Joshua Cabral, and thank you, as always, for taking the time out of your week to listen to a podcast about language teaching. That's what makes you the incredible educator that you are. So thank you for taking the time each week to do that. I just want to ask you real quickly before we jump into today's topic to make sure that you are getting all of these episodes every Monday when they come out. And the way to do that is to make sure that you are liking or subscribing on whatever app that you are listening to this podcast on right now. So take a look at that and make sure that you have clicked like, subscribe, or whatever it's asking you to do. That way, we'll make sure that we can hang out every Monday morning or whenever we happen to hang out during the week, but we can start hanging out every Monday morning with new episodes. So we're going to talk about several activities that you can use in your classroom. And as I said in the intro, a lot of times teachers like to hear that it's something they could do right away, which usually means that it's kind of minimal prep. And most of what I'm going to share with you today is little to no prep. Some of it might require a little bit, but for the most part, I want to keep it pretty simple. Now, when we talk about all these different activities, you may have heard me say this on the podcast in the past, that we teachers are often curators, like in a museum. Like a curator is finding all of the art pieces and putting them together in a way that makes sense, right? That's what a curator does. They're not actually creating it. A lot of times, that's what teachers are doing. We're finding all these ideas that other people are coming up with because we can't have new ideas all the time. And we take those and we put them together into our teaching and we create essentially a masterpiece experience for our students. So a lot of times what I do is I hear about what other teachers are doing and it sparks an idea for me. So it might not be exactly what they're doing, but I'll take it and I'll think, okay, how can I maybe modify this a little bit to make it work for my students? So I'm kind of a curator myself like that. And we're also master adapters, particularly as language teachers, because sometimes we have to change for the proficiency level. Sometimes we have to look at it from a different lens because of the cultural aspect or the language itself. I'm really happy to be part of a community of teachers who are so willing to share. So a lot of times what I come up with, you know, I will have a spark of an idea and I'll create something. But then a lot of times I'll hear what somebody else is doing and I'll build upon that out of their generosity. And I hope that you are doing the exact same thing with everything I share on this podcast and from what you hear from other teachers, that sometimes, yeah, you'll use it exactly as you hear it. But many times it's going to spark a different idea of a way to use it that maybe you wouldn't have come up with had you not heard someone talking about what their topic was. So as we jump into all these episodes, I just like to put that lens out there that we're curators of all of these materials and ideas. So whether you use it exactly that way or you find a better way or a different modification of it, have at it. And when you do that, can you share it out with us so that we can all benefit from it? Whether that's on social media, through an email, however that is, or hey, why don't you even come on the podcast with me and talk about it? So by the way, if you are ever interested, if that sparks an interest in you at all to come on and talk with me on the podcast, I'd love to hear from you. In the show notes, at the very bottom of the show notes in every episode, there's a form there to get in touch with me if you're interested in being on the podcast. And I'm always looking to talk with teachers who are proud of what they do, they're excited about what they do, and they can share out for all of us to hear about it. So if you don't consider yourself an expert, no problem at all, because I think that experience over expertise often works much better, particularly for all of us teachers in the classroom. So let's hear about your experience and not your expertise. So you'll find that link in the show notes if you would like to come on. I'd love to hear from you. So now let's jump into our four activities today. So the first one in English is called The Die Decides, like die as in the singular of dice. I know it sounds a little weird to say die in the title, but The Die Decides, right? Because we only use one die in this activity, so that's why it's called that. So I came across an activity on theteachertoolkit.com, and it's called Nothing Ventured. And then the wheels started turning right away, started curating and adapting. They started turning right away. And I started thinking of different ways that it could be used in a language classroom. There are a lot of useful ideas on the Teacher Toolkit website, but they're not specific to language teaching. So don't worry about it. I like to take these things and I will make it specific to language teaching. So I got you covered. So stick around. So I got to work creating a template to use with my students in the target language for this activity that I saw on there. And I also put together templates in English, Spanish, Portuguese, French, German, and Italian. So if you teach any of those languages or you just want to download them and you can modify it for a language I didn't mention, there is a link in the show notes to download. And it also includes the directions for doing this activity in your classroom. So I'm going to talk about it right now, but there's a link to the blog post I have on it because particularly in this episode, a lot of the things are more visual. So you're going to have to take a look at it, some of it to use, and some of it's going to actually require downloading a template to use. So if you go to the show notes, you'll see the link to The Die Decides. That'll bring you over to my blog post. And there you can then click on the link and download the templates that I talked about. So The Die Decides, which again, on the Teacher Toolkit website, it was called Nothing Ventured. So I changed it to The Die Decides. So essentially the first thing that you want to do, and this is where the template comes in, is you're setting up a grid. And so at the top, it just has the title, like The Die Decides. And then you create five columns. So the first column is questions. And I usually will number it 1 to about 15. So that's the first column. So it's just the numbers of the questions that you're going to do. The second column, you just label as die. So it's going to be the number that comes up on the die when it's rolled. Then there's a big column for the response. And then the fourth column is points. And then the fifth column is total. So it's five columns. So it's the question number, the number on the die, the response, the points earned, and then the running total. So that's what it's set up like. So how do we then go about this? I chose this idea, The Die Decides, from my take on this activity, because I'm always looking for ways to incorporate different materials we have around the classroom, and I always tend to have lots of dice around, and so I want to find ways to use them. So when doing this activity, it can be done with any topic at all. So it can be done by individual students, all playing together in the class against each other, or you can have students in pairs or small groups. So it doesn't matter how you do it, but just each group needs a 6-sided die and the die decide sheet. And of course, the die decides will be in whatever your target language is. It won't be in English unless you're doing ESL. So the players, whether that's individual pairs or groups, they start before each question by each rolling the die before the question is presented. Each group rolls their die and then they record the number rolled on the die in the column on their sheet that says die. So it's question 1, roll it, got a 3. I write a 3 in the die column. Now the teacher shows a question, perhaps it's projected or you just say it verbally. Students discuss if they're in pairs or groups. Or alone, they just kind of think about it, and then they write their answer in the answer column of their sheet. So first column is, okay, it's number 1, I rolled a 3, that's the second column, and the third column, I write my answer. So once that's all done, you, the teacher, says or shows the correct answer to the question, projected or just verbally. It can be part of their projection slides, or you can just simply write the answer on the board. So then students check their answer and determine whether they were correct or incorrect. This is where you want to be a little vigilant and make sure you go around and check if they're saying it's correct. And you can decide if you want it to be 100% accurate or 80% there. You know, just kind of make sure that they are generally correct if that's what you're going for. And you may ask students to put down writing utensils so they can't alter answers. You know, that's kind of the way the different classes will operate that way. But essentially, if the answer is correct, the players will get the points that they rolled prior to the question being asked. So I gave the example of I rolled a 3, so it's correct. So in the points column, I write a 3. Now, if it's incorrect, I write a negative 3 because I'm going to actually lose those points. And then as you go through with each question, students will roll the die before the question, answer the question, check their answer, and then either plus or minus the points. And then in the last column is where they will keep going with their running total. So by question 5, they might be up at 27 points. And then at question 6, they end up losing 4 points because they didn't get it correct. So then they have to subtract that from their total. So the player or the individual or pair or group with the most points after all the questions have been asked wins the round. Now, I, again, usually do about 15 questions. So students enjoy this activity and use so much language as they discuss possible answers, listen to and read questions, react to their points as they change throughout the game. So you can even give them some language to do that. So remember, you can download templates in English, Spanish, Portuguese, French, German, and Italian in the show notes right from the blog post. So the Die Decide is very interactive, and it can be used for, as I said, any topic in your language class. So if they're novice level students, they could be practicing just vocabulary themes where you're showing them a picture and they're writing down the word. Or perhaps you're doing something with language structures where they're writing particular verb forms, or maybe you're doing something with adjective forms, anything that's more structure related. Or you can assess understanding of reading or listening. So after students read, you could ask some questions of comprehension of the text, or perhaps they've listened to a video or watched a video, listened to a podcast part, anything like that, and then you can use this as a way of assessing the listening. It's also ideal before an assessment, you know, to help students work on the areas that they maybe need to focus on as you're going through. So lots of possibilities, and it's really just a template, and it can be absolutely no prep if you just make the questions up as you go. So that is the Die Decides, and remember that the link to the blog post where you can see some visuals of it and also download the PDF templates to use in all those languages is in the show notes. So the next activity, and this is called Logic Puzzles, and if you follow me on social media, you know I was talking about this for a long time because I had this mission to figure out how to do them. So I actually took about 3 days over my winter break, and I just focused in all day, every day, to make sure I could figure this out finally and create some templates, and I got there. So now I'm happy that I can share these with you. So I have been workshopping how to make logic puzzles so that I can engage students in lots of topics of vocabulary, language structures, anything, things that are coming up in stories. So if you're not familiar with logic puzzles, it's this idea that you have a little story or maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 sentences providing information. And then based on the information, students keep track of that data in a grid so that they can figure out all the answers in the end by using logic and critical thinking. So say, for example, you have 4 characters and then there are 4 character traits. So the characters are across the top of the grid, and down the left-hand column are 4 character traits. Or you have 4 people's names across the top and then pictures of classroom objects down the left-hand side. So then you have to figure out if it's classroom objects, say a student put something in their bag or they bought something. So you have to figure out, like, what did Mateo buy? Or, you know, what did Marie buy at the store? Anything like that. So there's going to be different sentences, like this person didn't buy this or that. Oh, so you have to keep track of that in the grid. So once you use your critical thinking skills and you understand all the sentences, in the end, you can figure out what is each thing that each person bought or ate or did or anything like that. So I've seen these all over on the internet. I often see them in bookstores. When I'll go in, I'll see all these logic puzzles, and I've been wanting so much to try to figure out how to do it, because it's yet another way to provide students with opportunities to see and use language in context. And as I said, these logic puzzles require a bit of critical thinking skills as well, as they have to follow the logic and figure out the answers. So as I said, I spent some time coming up with the equations and the templates so that I can just add in the topic of vocabulary and then write in the clue sentences. So it really does come down to essentially creating these equations, which I've done, and there are a bunch of versions of it, and there's a link to the blog post that I have. So it's called Logic Puzzles. You'll see the link in the show notes. And on there, you can download the templates to your Google Drive. It'll actually make a copy to your Google Drive so that you can edit it and do whatever you want with it. But the templates explain exactly how to use them. And it also has all of the equations that you follow. So I decided to create four versions that increase in sort of challenge level. So it starts with 3 people, then 4 people, then 5, and then 6, then 8. So you can download your own templates and get to work creating your own logic puzzles for your students. So again, the link is in the show notes. And just follow the equations for the clues and you'll be all set and ready to go. And it doesn't take very long at all. So with the 4 versions, there are examples of the directions in English, but you can modify all of it once it copies to your Google Drive. So you can easily change the directions to your target language. And it's one sentence on every page. It's not very much. So what you will do is you will begin by choosing one of the grids. Oh, this is a 4x4 or a 5x5. Oh, so this is 4, so I'm going to put 4 things across the top and 4 things down the bottom, whether that's names across the top and places along the side where you got to figure out where each person went, anything you want. So begin by filling in the boxes in the top row and the column on the left, and then you're ready to start writing the sentences so that students can collect the data. So you use these data equations to write sentences that lead students to follow the logic and figure out the answers. So you'll see that each column has a letter and each row has a number, so that A on the top and 1 on the side, A1 match up to 1 box. So then you'll be able to follow the equations that way. So for example, I know the visual is really going to help with this, but just so you know, the equations are ready for you just to easily use. So the equation will look like C doesn't equal 2. So that means you go across the top and you say, oh, C is where I put Maria. Maria is C, and that does not equal 2. Oh, and number 2, I'm doing classroom objects, and there's a pencil that is lined up with number 2. So C doesn't equal number 2. My sentence is going to be that Maria doesn't put a pencil in her backpack. And maybe the object is to find out what each person put in their backpack. And then you might have A equals 2. So across A on the top, you might have Jerome, and then 2, you're doing places. And there is, in number 2, there's a picture of a restaurant. And then you would say that, oh, so A equals 2, so that means that it's correct. So Jerome va au restaurant. Jerome goes to the restaurant. So once you do them all through, then you'll be left with all the possible answers. So doing things like Laura has a tablet, Julia doesn't have a pencil, anything like that, right? So the last thing that I do at the bottom, you'll see, is to add questions where students have to fill in their answers from the grid. So it'll say things like, what does Lucia put in her backpack? Or what does Joshua eat on the weekend? You know, so whatever the information that's in there. So again, all of this is in the blog post that's linked in the show notes. And the hard part is coming up with these equations, and I did it all for you. So please go and get it and make me happy that you're using it, because it was a lot of work to come up with them all. I love it. When I hand these out to students, they're like, can we do another one? Can we try another one? I handed one out the other day and a student said, this is how I know you love me, because she just loves the working through it with the critical thinking skills, and it puts language in context so easily. So jump on down to the show notes and get your own copy of all those templates, and you can start making taking those right away. So we had the die decides and the logic puzzles, the things I have been working on, both of those for the last couple of months. So I'm so happy to finally be able to share them out with you. So the next thing I want to look at is this idea of a practice in your classroom that's called Learn, Practice, Apply. So you may be aware that I spend a lot of time in Nicaragua, not particularly over the last 2 or 3 years because of the pandemic, but I'm so happy that I will be back there this summer. So excited about that. So I work with a lot of teachers and students when I'm there, and I learn so much from the way that they approach education. So these are teachers that have very limited resources and often don't see their students regularly. We're in a pretty remote area where they don't have a lot of access. So for various reasons, children are unable to come to school every day or regularly. Many times they have to help with getting water to their houses, which is usually quite a distance away because they don't have running water where they are. Or maybe they need to stay with younger siblings or cousins while their parents are working some distance away. The reality is that in this particular town, which is called Panama, it's actually a barrio of La Concha, and these teachers have to take full advantage of the time they have with their students to make sure that everything that they teach is directly applicable to their lives, that it's not just kind of fluff teaching and interesting teaching and fun practice. So they have this mantra that they all say all the time that they learn at the university, and it's APA, APA, and that stands for Aprendo, Practico, Aplico in Spanish, which is Learn, Practice, Apply. And that's what they constantly do. Whatever the students learn, they practice and they have to apply it. And I have found this simple framework so useful when planning lessons and activities in my language classroom. So I took this and I created what I call tab books on a number of topics in French and Spanish that follow this sequence. And I call them tab books because students cut them out and they're done in a way that when you layer them on top of each other, there's a tab so they can see each section. So they're very interactive, the way they put them together, and students enjoy assembling them and then working through this whole process. And sometime last year, I reformatted all the tab books so that they don't have to actually be assembled. So I put them into a very no-prep 3-page activity rather than cutting out the different pages. So whether you're using the tab books or these 3-page versions of it, these learn, practice, apply activities, I call them. So they begin with scaffolded notes so students get familiar with the material. And then there are practice activities where they are practicing the material. And then finally, students apply the material in the last section. And the apply stage is often left out when teaching new material. So these activities assure that students get to this stage in the learning process. So there is a link, of course, in the show notes. So if you look at the Learn, Practice, Apply link, it'll send you to my blog post where you'll see lots of visuals of what these look like. And then again, how to download your own copies if you'd like to use them with your students on a number of French and Spanish topics, and whether it's vocabulary or language structures. And whether you're using those or you're just keeping this in mind in your own teaching is anytime students are learning something new and they are practicing, that you get them to that place where they're actually applying it as well. So it's not just left in practice mode. So again, the link is in the show notes and you can go to the blog post on that. So the fourth activity I want to share with you is what I call time capsule. And if you teach multiple grade levels or various proficiency levels, you probably like to find an activity or project that you can use like across levels. So I would like to share a project with you that you can use with novice and or intermediate learners. And it's essentially the same concept. It differs only in how students engage with the content that they produce. So with a time capsule, you know, this whole idea of it's something that you would typically like put in a box or something like that, and you put it aside and then you revisit it at some point later in your life and you look at the objects inside, and it's a time capsule because it's representative of what was going on during that particular period in the past, right? So I have students create a time capsule that is a snapshot of their life over the past year. And I'm sharing this with you now because I would recommend that you do it sometime in the last month of the school year. So you can start to think now, if you're listening to this right now as it's published in late winter, early spring, but you can listen to it anytime, of course. But I would recommend trying to do it sometime approaching near the end of the school year so that students can sort of look at a year in their life, their school year in their life. So I typically do this in Google Slides digitally. I've seen it done in a journal as well with pictures and writing and gluing those things onto the pages. And that's pretty tactile and that can be a great opportunity for creative design. But I find it's logistically easier to manage when it's digital. So again, there's a link in the show notes to go to my blog post, which has images of this. But not just that, it also has a list of topics that I give students to reflect on. So the things that they are putting in their time capsule or on their Google Slide, pictures on their Google Slide. So that's the first step, is they figure out pictures to go along with all the prompts. It's things like who is your math teacher? What was your favorite movie? What was the most popular song this year? Or what is the most popular song this year? What team did you play on? What performance were you in? What musical instrument did you play? Anything, lots of different things like that. So students begin by finding pictures to represent their answers to all of that on each individual Google slide. Now comes the writing part. So for novice mid to novice high students, they write about what is in their time capsule right now. And these sentences go on each slide with the images. So at this level, I usually provide sentence starters as well, such as my favorite actress is, or my math teacher is. At this proficiency level, the work is done in the present. So that's particularly where students are in terms of writing on their own at that novice level and using sentence starters. But the thing about this is it's so personal about all the things that they are interested in that are their favorite things from the past year. So they write about it as they're saying, this is what's in my time capsule right now, or like, this is what I'm putting in my time capsule right now. Now, when it comes to intermediate low to intermediate mid students, they write as if they were opening the time capsule in 50 years from now and writing about what they used to do, what they liked, who their teachers were 50 years ago. You can see where I'm going with this, right? So for languages with preterite and imperfect tenses, this lends itself to using the preterite and imperfect so accurately, and it provides an effective way to contextualize all of those tenses, because you're looking back and these are the things you did all the time. This was your favorite actress all the time then. It wasn't just in one particular movie, right? So I also include a speaking component. So once students are done with their time capsule and are very familiar with all the content, because you know they chose it on their own, I set up a time for them to have a 5-minute discussion with me about their time capsule. You can also have them do it on Flipgrid if that's not a possibility. The only issue with that is they tend to read directly and it's more presentational speaking, whereas if you can have a discussion with them, it can be true interpersonal communication, but it's on topics that they know very well because they actually chose the specific topics and their preferences. So you can be asking them, oh, so say we are now 77 years old and we're having a discussion about what 9th grade was like for you, what 10th grade was like for you. Oh, so I see that in your time capsule there is a picture of a singer that was your favorite singer. It's like, oh, why did you like that singer? What did the singer sing about? What were some of that singer's songs? So you can see how it contextualizes and uses all of the mostly imperfect if your language has that. So just think about adding on some sort of interpersonal as well as the writing there. And it can be a little bit of a lengthy process, but it includes all of the modes, which is really great. So those are the four activities I wanted to share, but I want to throw in a little bit of a bonus. And this is ChatGPT. Now, I would be remiss if I did not mention ChatGPT. I've heard so much about it lately, as you have as well. So let's just talk about ChatGPT. And I just want to share with you how I'm using it, everyone sharing how they're using it. Just maybe this will spark an idea for you. But there are two main ways that I have found it incredibly useful. What I want to point out about using ChatGPT is if students are using it and it is providing information and details, they don't necessarily know if those details are correct. And that's where it can be a really bad use of ChatGPT because it can make stuff up sometimes that's just completely inaccurate. So where we as teachers can use it, it can help us with saving some time and being more efficient, but we can be on top of the accuracy of what it's producing. So that's really what I'm using it for, is to save time, but I'm able to vet the accuracy of the information. I'm not just talking about the language. Some of the information is not always correct as well. So that's where our expertise as teachers come in. So I've been using it as a way to expand on reading that we do in class. So we do a lot of CI readers in my classrooms. So one of the things that I use it for is an idea that I got from Ben Tinsley. And Ben talks about doing map talks with students where you take a country and you kind of talk through geographic details of the country, demographics about the population, whether it's religion, different races, ethnicities that are coming up within there, different landforms, historical events, well-known people, people that have been important within the history. So this map talk idea is sort of bulleted points of maybe 15 to 20 things about a country where you're looking at it on the map and then you're talking through some of the details and learning about it. So there's a lot of information that you would have to research and compile to do that. So I went into ChatGPT and I was very specific. The more specific, the better. So I would say, I want you to please act like, I would say act like or act as if you were. Act as if you were an eighth grade French teacher and write 20 bullet points about the country of Togo in West Africa, period. And then I would say, please include information about geography, demographics, ethnicity, race, religion, all of that. Also include some cultural elements and elements that have to do with important times in history. And then the last thing I always say is the proficiency level that I want it written at. So I would say, write it in French using ACTful proficiency level intermediate low and keep it to phrases of no more than 7 words. Then press enter and you will quickly receive your map talk script. Now, here's the point where you as the teacher have to go through and vet all the details. Like, for instance, if it provides a detail about when Togo got its independence, when its Independence Day is, or when it's celebrated, you have to vet that and make sure that that's actually the date and the year when it happened, because it may not be accurate. But that's something you can quickly check, and it's already in there, updated if it's not. You can look at other demographic information just to make sure that it's correct. The other thing that I've done is I have asked it to then create assessments on that. You can say, give me multiple choice assessment on these topics or on this particular reading. Again, you have to go through and make sure, but it is a good way of saving time. So that's one thing that I have definitely been using it for. So I would recommend using it for that, but keep in mind that you really do have to vet what it is putting out there to make sure it's correct. Because you can ask it to write a paragraph, again, give the proficiency level, give what you are as the teacher. I am a sophomore level 2 Spanish teacher, and I want a paragraph written in the first person using only present tense on the topic of teenage life in Guatemala, and things I typically do in a day, where I live, about my family, and then you just let it go. And then if you don't like it, you can ask it to modify certain things. You could say, could you simplify this to the novice high proficiency level? And then you can ask it to write an assessment. Give me 5 true-false questions, 5 multiple choice questions, 5 open-ended, and then 5 questions for the student taking the assessment about the topics in there, but personal to them. These are really good to use for do nows and exit tickets, which I talked about a couple of weeks back. So lots of ways to use ChatGPT in there, but don't take it at face value. Make sure the information is correct. All kinds of great things, hopefully, that you heard on here today that you can bring into your classroom. So be sure to check out the show notes where you'll see the links to all of the blog posts. So the Die Decides, the time capsules, the learn, practice, apply, and the logic puzzles. And you'll also see within those blog posts, there are all the links where you can download templates to do all of that in your class as well. And good luck with ChatGPT, and let's use it for good and not evil in the world, as some people are saying right now. So check out all of the links in the show notes so that you can get your hands on all the activities we talked about. And there's also a link to sign up for Talking Points, my weekly email newsletter, as you know, with tips and resources for language teaching. And there's also a link to get in touch with me if you'd like to work together, either in person, in your school, or remotely. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now. You've been listening to the World Language Classroom Podcast. Be sure to follow or subscribe wherever you're listening so you don't miss a single episode. Let's continue the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at WL Classroom. You can also see over 250 blog posts about language teaching at, you guessed it, WLClassroom.com.